It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. The National Academy of Sciences says that, thanks to climate change, there will be dramatic shifts in where wine grapes can grow over the next 40 years. And that could mean more wine from, say, Missoula, Montana, and Surrey, England. But researchers also predict a reduction of 50% in land suitable for wine in many places, including the Napa and Sonoma valleys in California, Bordeaux and the Rhone Valley in France, Tuscany in Italy, and South Africa. With the end of apartheid 20 years ago, the Cape region of South Africa put its people and its Mediterranean climate to work and built a billion-bottle-a-year wine industry that now exports 8 times as much as it did just a dozen years ago. And South African winemakers are taking the climate threat seriously, with associations offering advice on how wineries can both mitigate and adapt to climate risks by becoming more sustainable, managing water, and lowering carbon footprints. It's raining on and off on a winter day in May when I stop by the Baxburg Estate Cellars. The wine farm lies on the lower reaches of Simonsburg Mountain near Paarl and Stellenbosch, a 40-minute drive from Cape Town. In 2011, Greenpeace gave Baxburg an award for climate change leadership after it became the first winery in Africa to go carbon neutral. It's a matter of pride for Simon Beck, a young man with bright, inquisitive eyes and an easy manner who manages marketing and exports for the vineyard. He says the weather already seems less stable.
We're at the end of May now, and May was actually a relatively dry month, so it feels like all the rain is coming in the space of a couple of days. There's a huge amount of rain that's come in the last 48 hours, and there's more to come in the next few days.
So more weather volatility, that's what you're saying?
It would appear so on the surface, definitely. I can't really claim, at least in the short time I've been working at the farm, that I can say, okay, definitively there has been a rise in temperatures, but I can definitely see a changing in weather patterns. You know, so for instance, this year, the harvest was almost 2-3 weeks later than usual. Normally in the past, we could more or less pinpoint within a few days when we were going to pick a particular block.
And there is a long record to compare today's timing against. As the rain takes a break, we settle in for a chat on the veranda of the winery restaurant, where Simon Back tells me this land has been in his family for 4 generations, since his great-grandfather emigrated from Lithuania.
My family's Jewish, and they were fleeing some of the interesting stuff going on in Europe at that time. He got on a boat and arrived in Cape Town in 1902. And a few long years of lots of work and probably some tears in along the way. But he managed to own a butchery in a nearby town called Paarl. And he worked at the butchery for a few years. And in 1916, someone came into the butchery and said, "Hey, do you want to buy a farm?" He saw it as an opportunity, and he sold his butchery and bought what is today Baxburg.
So this wine farm has been here for nearly 100 years, and I gather you'd like to see it go for another 100 years at least.
Exactly. I'm the fourth generation, and hopefully there'll be many more after me.
There's a challenge, though. This recent paper from the National Academy of Sciences says that the area that South Africa is going to be able to grow grapes for wine is going to shrink by half over the next 30 or 40 years. What does that mean for you here?
No, I think climate change is very much a reality and a challenge that the South African wine industry is going to have to face and come up with ways of managing over the next few years.
So when you come into your estate, there's a big sign that says South Africa's first carbon neutral vineyard. What does that mean?
In 2006, mostly my father and now the rest of the company really sat down and said, well, you know, what are we responsible for as a winery and as a business? You know, what is our impact on the environment? You know, we as a family, as a business, have enjoyed the fruits of the land for many years, and it was kind of this feeling of, well, we now need to A, take account, and B, almost reverse the clock on some of the impacts that we've had. What we've really tried to do here is produce great wine, which is something we're not willing to compromise on, but do it slightly differently and really look at what we're doing and making reductions in the emissions, reduce our impact, you know, on a day-to-day basis.
Okay, so let's walk around, and you can show us some of these things that you've been talking about.
Should we talk a little bit about what's going on in the restaurant, for instance.
Sure.
Yeah. If you look at the furniture and the roof within the restaurant, we've tried to give a kind of second life to our oak barrels. You know, the wine industry is effectively cutting down trees in France, which are perhaps 300 years old. We're turning it into a barrel. We're using the barrel for between 5 and 7 years, and then effectively it's a waste product. And what we've tried to do here at Baxburg is make furniture out of it. And so we've got tables, we've got chairs, and our roof is covered with oak staves.
Well, you have a full restaurant now, so are you selling this furniture elsewhere now?
Yeah, and we've actually got a full-time carpenter who makes a lot of this furniture, and we're trying to sell it as well.
He then leads the way into what seems to be a mostly empty warehouse, scented with fresh wine.
So now we're kind of in the heart of the cellar, and this is where, over harvest time, it's a very busy area, and where the fermentation happens and the pressing of the grapes happen. So if you look within a cellar, there's a massive demand for electricity, and that electricity is primarily used for refrigeration and controlling the fermentation.
And the electricity is used to cool and pump and...
Exactly. So in the case of red wine, we want to control the fermentation in degrees Celsius at around between 27 and 29, and in white wine around 11, 12, 13.
The way you're supposed to drink it.
Exactly. The things that we've done here is we've tried to sort of manage the electricity usage here. And in the case of red wine, we figured out, and again, this is not really so much a technological advancement as just using some of the information out there. We've got a large irrigation dam just up the hill here, and we realized that water beneath a certain depth was a constant 15 degrees. And as I said, with the red wine fermentation, that has to happen at 27 degrees. And so we realized we could actually just use dam water below that level in managing the fermentation. And so with all our red wine now, we're hardly using any electricity to control the fermentation. In the case of white wine, we couldn't use the dam water because the fermentation happens at a temperature below that of the dam water. But we can use that initial cooling and just supplement that to control the white wine fermentation.
Not only do they save on cooling costs in the summer heat, no pumps are needed to drain the fermentation vats, as they are mounted on a balcony where the wine can be fed by gravity into the barrels. Simon estimates the vineyard has cut its electricity consumption by 20 to 25% by harvesting the low-hanging fruit of efficiency. And for the bulk of the remaining energy needs, they're using biofuels. A biomass boiler makes hot water for all kinds of applications, including the cleaning of the oak barrels used to age the wine. The fuel for the biomass boiler is free.
Right now, we have a partnership with a sawmill down the road, and we're using a lot of their waste cuttings and sawdust, which we're feeding our biomass boiler with.
But just in case the sawmill stops giving away its waste cuttings, Baxburg wants to be prepared.
And so we're looking at all sorts of ways of actually growing our own biomass here on the farm itself. And to that point, if you just look over the field here, what you see growing there is actually prickly pears. And that is potentially a huge source of biomass that we can potentially dry and feed our biomass boiler with. And as one of the fantastic things about this plant is that it's very hardy and it doesn't require a lot of water.
What about putting, say, solar panels here or windmills?
Both of those, solar and wind, are becoming very interesting. Up until recently, solar has actually just been too expensive. But the last couple of years, even the last year, the prices have come down dramatically, and there's also now a rebate that's available. So we're seriously looking at putting in some solar to add into the mix of what we're doing.
And windmills?
Unfortunately, we don't have sufficient wind over the whole duration of the year to make it a viable proposition. So unfortunately, wind's not going to work for us at this stage.
But you do have plenty of sunshine.
We do have plenty of sunshine, and us on the farm and South Africa in general is a huge resource as far as that goes. The other thing that we've done as far as on the offsetting the emissions part is wherever we, in small parts of the farm where perhaps it doesn't make sense to grow vines, we've actually planted trees. And, you know, here before you, you can see an array of trees which has formed part of offsetting our carbon emissions. And if you drive around the farm, you'll see little pockets of trees everywhere.
And Baxberg also sponsors the planting of trees elsewhere in South Africa to make sure they have offset all their carbon emissions. This vineyard constantly looks for ways to become more sustainable. They've planted acres of blueberries to diversify their crops, and they have a gleaming tower of tanks devoted to an experiment of making biodiesel. They've also expanded their water reservoirs, as well as reusing their gray water. And under what looks like a large greenhouse frame, they're working to turn their waste cardboard cartons into an asset.
So right here, where we're standing now, you're seeing the beginning stages of a project which involves farming with earthworms. We've got a lot of waste carton that comes from the winery, which we're trying to get rid of, and the worms really love to eat the carton. And basically what happens is we, on the one hand, getting rid of the carton, and two, we having some amazing compost as well. And the other thing is that you can actually harvest the worms and you can mash them up and dry them and get protein. And with the protein, you can do a number of things as well, as in terms of actually just selling it in the form of protein.
Who would buy worm protein?
A lot of fish farmers would use protein, and I think that's going to be one of the shortages around the world going forwards. If you look at how our seas are being overfished, there's going to be a big shortage on the protein front, I think.
So you apply the compost as fertilizer to your vines?
Exactly. So we'll take the compost from this and put it back into the vineyards, and then that will hopefully all contribute to having healthier vines.
So where are we off to now?
So I'm going to take you on a little tour of the farm and specifically show you the lyre trellising system that we put in place, well, that we're starting to roll out over the farm when we plant new vineyards. Should I put the car off or...?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. We'll get out for a moment. So what are we looking at here now?
So this is a block of Sauvignon Blanc that we're looking at. And the interesting thing that I want to point out is that it's quite a different trellising technique to your standard kind of vertical straight line planting system. And what you've got here is called the lyre system. And basically you plant them closer together, but then you train them left and right up into a kind of Y shape. And what you have here is almost a kind of double hedge. And so the widths of the rows are wider. So you're driving up and down per hectare effectively less, but you've got more or less the same vineyard canopy space. It's a real win because you're saving on irrigation pipe, you're saving on wire, you're saving on poles, and you're driving in the vineyard less.
Can we walk up just a little bit?
Sure. If you look at the slope there across the way, there's nothing planted to vine there. And this section of the farm going down into the valley is an area that we've set aside for the preservation of fynbos, which is the kind of natural vegetation of the area. We are part of a program which is run by the WWF called the Biodiversity and Wine Initiative. And as part of that, we've set aside 10% of our land holding for the preservation of fynbos. And within that program, we are a so-called champion of biodiversity. And I think there are about 20 wineries in South Africa that have gotten that status.
So what creatures are here because you've set aside this land?
The great thing is that we've seen an incredible increase in bird life, for instance. Every year we have a bird club come and visit and document all the bird life on the farm, and we've seen like a number of different birds coming back to this area, and small buck. It's been really amazing to see the kind of rejuvenation of that area.
And this is no small matter. Without conservation reserves, mature producing vineyards offer poor habitat value for native species. Just before our final stop on the tour, the wine tasting room, we meet Michael Beck, Simon's father. Michael is the third generation of Becks to grow grapes on this land and the driving force behind the innovations Simon showed me.
I'm the chief cook and bottle washer, so I'll sign the checks or I'll shovel the you-know-what.
Why did you decide to try to make your vineyard climate neutral?
I think that it comes from a long way back when, if you're in the agricultural sector, you have access to big equipment. So when the tree's in the way, you don't need to work around it. You just push it out of the way. And one day, probably 15 or more years ago, I was driving around the farm, and I thought, but hang on, we've actually done a lot of damage to the property, and we needed to start to slowly rebuild it back. And I think that's when the penny dropped that you can farm, you can be commercial, but you can be concerned about the environment at the same time.
We head into the wine tasting room, complete with oak barrel furniture, the Becksburg Estate Cellar's whole suite of over 24 fine wines, including some special reserves and several gold medal winners. Along one wall, there's a group of wines that's been a real hit with the hiking and biking crowd in South Africa called Tread Lightly.
It's a range of wines that's, in fact, bottled in PET, so plastic, if you will. And wine connoisseurs might be shocked at this notion, but in fact, there are many benefits of bottling a wine in PET. First of all, the bottle itself weighs about 50 grams, which if you compare it to a glass bottle, which weighs about 450, 500 grams, you're talking about a tenth of the weight. You know, so if you can imagine how this gets multiplied out through the supply chain, you know, the shipping of the bottles to the winery and then us exporting the wine around the world, there's massive savings as far as fuel and emissions go.
So what about the quality of the wines that are in these plastic bottles?
The wine is really good quality. In fact, a number of the wines have picked up some awards, so that's great news. I think the only thing that you have to be aware of is that wines in PET, generally, at this point in time, you're not going to keep for longer than 2 years. So if you're intending on cellaring wines in, you know, a proper cellar for 10 or 20 years, then it's not something maybe you want to do in the case of PET.
So you better drink it right up.
Yeah, better drink it right up, which I know in my case is not a major problem.
And from what I tasted with Simon Beck at the Becksburg Estate Cellars, it wouldn't be a problem for me either. Becksburg and other sustainable wine estates are being closely watched for clues as to how well the growers of this finicky crop can cope with the increasingly volatile climate with extremes of heat, drought, and rainfall. And who knows? While there may be some territory that simply becomes totally unsuitable for wine production, good management may allow vineyards like Becksburg to continue to succeed and serve up plenty of fine and delicious vintages to enjoy in the years to come.